All right, here we go again tonight. Let's hope we don't have any sort of major weather tonight like we did last night. It was, I don't know, I was driving around Robbinsdale, trees down all over the place in the sort of Robbinsdale, Minneapolis, Victory, Memorial Drive area. A lot of cleanup for people. A lot of contractors knocking on doors probably with hail hitting your roofs and that sort of thing. You know, just buy local. That's what I always say. Pay attention to who's knocking on the door. Lots going on in the news over this weekend. Let's get you up to date with everything that's on my mind as we do the D Rush Hour news headlines.
Now, time to get you caught up on some of the biggest stories of the day. These are the D Rush Hour headlines.
Good evening. Our top story.
This just in.
Our top story.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin with the lead.
And our lead story is serious security breach. A naked guy gets into the Minnesota State Capitol. And was there like three times before he was finally taken into custody? Lots of questions about security, about lawmakers' safety, all of this. Of course, against the backdrop of an assassin targeting elected state officials. Not that long ago, Blois Olson is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline because he's been gathering and reporting on lawmaker concern in the morning and the lunch take. Blois, it's a drive time take now, right now. How serious are our lawmakers considering this breach?
Depends on how which lawmaker there is. But look, I think in the environment we're in with the assassination of Melissa Hortman, the shooting of the Hoffmans, that there is no lawmaker who shouldn't be taken seriously on this issue. And there is multiple factors that say that the level of urgency since June 14th just doesn't seem to be as high as it will. And even the governor's comments today that he would be for a full assessment of security at the Capitol complex, to me, says, OK, now we're going to have an assessment. How long will that take? And when is there actually something in place that can make lawmakers and the public feel more secure that there's actually a plan to protect people at the Capitol?
Blois Olson with us. Blois, if somebody who thinks he's the governor, and clearly this guy, you know, I'm not as crazy about he should have been locked up, but the fact that three times he comes back, you're like, hey, I don't know. But the fact that somebody in this state was able to get in fairly easily, it seems, getting into the state capitol, to me is just astonishing. I can't believe it.
That there is a door without a camera, that there is a door without an alarm on the weekend when nobody's in session should say that it's not there. My sources have told me for months, this came up at the beginning of the session, that when the Capitol was renovated, it was wired for metal detectors and cameras. And they made the decision not to go full on metal detector when they reopened the Capitol after the restoration. But cameras and video monitoring would seem to be the, you know, a basic elementary thing that any security professional would recommend on a high target building. And let's also remember that Walz administration during various events of civil unrest, during the inauguration of Donald Trump the second time, declared that the Capitol was a potential target. And so it's not like they haven't had issues to review. They just don't seem to have the urgency to do anything about preventative.
You know, obviously, this specific scenario, like I'm not concerned that this specific guy was going to do anything, right? What I'm concerned about is that if it's that easy for a guy in the middle of mental health crisis to get into the state capitol building on a weekend when it's closed, well, that just underscores how easy we know, I guess, how easy when the Capitol's open that somebody who wanted to do harm would have very little problem getting in there and doing something. It just it underscores how I guess how unserious we are about this issue.
I think that's the point, Jason. We are unserious about it. But I want to put it in perspective. when I go to the Capitol after hours, even during session, to do TPT Almanac, I need an escort, and I don't have a key card, and I can't, like, many times I can't find my way in. When they aren't in session, somebody who's having a mental health crisis has found their way in. That should give you an idea that either I don't go in the right door or those doors don't have the right security.
Yeah. Yeah. Craziness. All right. Another example of just how much work needs to be done on this. And it doesn't seem that difficult. Any corporate building would have this sucker locked down, and it already would have been locked down after the assassination. So the fact that this happened this weekend to me is just absolutely head scratching.
We'll have more tomorrow in the morning take. I'm getting some info tonight from last week, and the governor said there's a meeting of legislative leaders on this topic, but there's also a Capitol security meeting on August 20th. But that's 2 months.
Do we need to wait for that? Isn't somebody in charge over there to say, like, let's at least like make sure we have a camera at every door?
I'll put it this way, Jason. You know that if there was a threat at WCCO radio, there would already have been a meeting.
Yeah.
And let's just say we don't quite have the resources of the state government at WCCO radio.
That's right. Blois Olson, Morning Take. We'll listen to you with Vanita tomorrow morning and read the Morning Take in our inbox via email tomorrow. Thanks, Blois.
See you, Jason.
Next up, an amazing development of technology from Mayo Clinic. It is a partnership with NVIDIA, which is the hottest name in artificial intelligence, and a way to try to harness all of the decades of slides, of little kind of samples, tissue samples from people who have been treated at Mayo Clinic. How can we unlock what is in there? Jim Rogers, the CEO of Mayo Clinic Digital Pathology, is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Because, Jim, you guys have so much information. This new AI supercomputer, the computing challenge is making sense of all of this data, right?
That's exactly right. And it's kind of fascinating. We have data that goes all the way back to our beginning. Essentially, we have records that were written by the Mayo brothers. We have pathology slides. So these are glass slides with tissue samples in them, going all the way back to the beginning. And so all that data is powerful and it's helpful, but a lot of it is in analog form, meaning that we can't have AI work against it to help create the new solutions. And so if we're able to unlock that data and digitize it in a way that then AI can be applied to it effectively, we believe we really can transform the way medicine is practiced.
This supercomputer is here in the Twin Cities area, and Brooklyn Park is where it's based. Why do it yourself? Why have build your own computer as opposed to kind of putting it in the cloud or doing it the way a lot of other places are?
Yeah, we're taking really a hybrid approach, meaning that we do still access compute in the cloud, and we do have on-prem resources, and we'll use compute at the edge. But the reason that we're using this cluster, and fortunately for us, you know, NVIDIA is doing all the heavy lifting for us.
Sure.
But the reason we're doing it and the reason that we're using it is when you're trying to build some of these models, these what we would call frontier or foundation models. These are models that are built on a massive amount of data, and they allow you to essentially unlock the insights within that data, and there you could build solutions on top of those models. To do that really takes a significant compute resource. To be able to have the resource that's available to us 100% allows us really to unlock a lot of our innovators internally. So we think it's important to do it.
The other thing I think is interesting as we're talking with Jim Rogers, the CEO of Mayo Clinic Digital Pathology, is that word pathology. You guys are focusing on, you know, diseases, understanding diseases, which is maybe different from the way we've been hearing about a lot of the innovation and sort of this supercomputing being applied to our bodies, which is focused more on like unlocking the genetics or the DNA.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of different data points that could be helpful in trying to find new therapies and new diagnostics. What's interesting about pathology is really only about maybe 5 to 10% of practices worldwide are currently digital. And so what that means is most people are still reading glass slides, much as we did back at the turn of the century around the 1800s, 1900s. Now the microscopes have changed. There's different staining techniques, so you can get a little bit more information. But the reality is all the data that's contained within those slides is really unavailable. It's locked up and it's unavailable for AI. And so what we think why pathology is because there's this huge trove of data that heretofore has really been untapped. And if we can figure a way to unlock it and tap it, we believe we can bring forward significant insights.
So cool. It's really exciting stuff, and we love having this kind of innovation happening here in Minnesota. Jim Rogers, CEO of Mayo Clinic Digital Pathology. Jim, thank you.
Jason, thank you. Really appreciate the opportunity and the time.
All right, Jim Rogers, pretty cool stuff going on at Mayo Clinic. That is the lead. Page 2 coming your way in just a moment. We are going to talk about a guy who resigned at the University of Minnesota and now is working for the federal agency that was investigating him. What? Eastside, St. Paul, what's going on with return to office? And Gen Z, are they really having less sex? We'll talk about that next. You know that sound. It means it's time for page 2 of the D Rush Hour News headlines. Our first story of this segment is... Oof. So this professor resigns at the University of Minnesota. He resigned because he was under investigation by a federal agency. And now the guy's working for the federal agency. In this story, our investigative reporter, Eric Rasmussen at 5 Eyewitness News, asked the question we are all asking, what? So this professor's under investigation. There were allegations that, like, he was kind of fabricating research results. So the Department of Energy is like, hey, this $2 million grant that we've given to you, we're ending it. And, you know, this guy, Dr. Sion Biswas, his attorney, denied the allegation, said the conclusions by the government were a gross exaggeration. But he did resign his position at the end of the school year. Kind of, you know, you're like, well, this ain't going to work out for me. I'm out of here. So he's like, well, I got to pick up some side hustle gig. How about I get a job at the Department of Energy? He is now a contractor with a fellowship through the DOE's Office of Technology Commercialization. His attorney, with a straight face, typed this into his computer. Dr. Biswas is deeply committed to advancing U.S. energy dominance and ensuring reliable, affordable energy for all Americans. His decision to serve at the Department of Energy reflects his commitment to shaping forward-looking energy policy. True, really. Well done. Well done. I mean, if you want to get really cynical about this guy went from working in a taxpayer-paid job at the University of Minnesota, resigned because the taxpayers didn't trust the grant money that they were giving to support his taxpayer-funded job. And now he's a contractor making money from the taxpayer. What a country. No wonder he's dedicated to forward-looking. All of this allegedly, of course. 5 Eyewitness News report, don't sue me. We've talked a lot about Target and some Minneapolis companies bringing people back to the office. But what's happening on the east side?
What are you looking at? Back to work.
Pioneer Press reporting that there is a decent amount of activity going on the east side of town. Two of Minnesota's largest employers, 3M and the state of Minnesota, recently announced they want their employees in office more often than not. But overall, it's not a massive sea change on the east side and in the suburbs. State employees have to come back at least 50% of their scheduled workdays. Legal publishing and media data firm Thomson Reuters is leaning into this hybrid work model. 3M has people coming back. Ecolab requires employees to spend at least 60% of their time in the office. That's been their policy since 2022. And Securian requires 3 days in the office. There are a lot of firms that have sort of landed on remote work, kind of the office as a hub where you come back occasionally. And so far, they seem to be sticking with that. Gen Z. Is Gen Z really having less sex?
There's all kinds of music. Fast and loud.
Yeah. See, this is Gen Z's problem.
Slow.
You listen to today's music.
Classical and pop.
That's not gonna
rhythm and blues.
That's not gonna get it done.
But baby, you know which one I choose.
Yeah. Okay. Dan, everyone's going to turn off the radio and just get going.
Good for them.
Yeah, good for them. Good for you. So USA Today reporting on this because there's a new book out by Carter Sherman, a 31-year-old. And her book is called The Second Coming. It explores Gen Z's sex lives or lack thereof. Now, in this USA Today story, nobody asked Carter Sherman what kind of her deal was, you know. 2022 survey from the Kinsey Institute found 1 in 4 Gen Z. Now, how old are Gen Zers? Before we get too worked up on this. Gen Zers are, 13 to 28 years old.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean,
that's in range.
Let's close our eyes and not think about the 13 to 18 year old.
Okay.
Says the dad. But
the latter decade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So pretty interesting. This journalist interviewed more than 100 young people and found it's not really a puritanical thing, but it is. There are a lot of reasons. Everybody, it's typical Gen Z, or everybody has a different reason. So some. Very aware of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, depending on where you live. The lack of access to abortion may be a reason. 16% of Gen Zers say they're more hesitant to date since the fall of Roe. So just some anxiety. And then the bottom line of the concern for this, by this journalist is she says, what I worry about is if having less sex is a proxy for not having relationships. That, I think, is a bigger concern. Whatever, if young people are or aren't, it doesn't really matter. But if you are not making connections with others, if you are not having relationships, that is a concern. So probably a lot more research to come in that area. That is the D-Rush Hour News headlines. Dave Schwartz, busy day in sports. Already the Twins making some moves. What else will happen in the coming days? Dave will talk about that next.